Warning. This podcast contains strong language and immature subject matter. We talk about farts. Listener discretion is advised.
We try to maintain the house as best we can, but with the cold and the rain, it's impossible to stop the damp and erosion. And with the mines right below, well, the wood is rotting and the house is sinking.
Welcome to another episode of the Lonely Hearts Romance Comics Podcast, the show that brings you not only romance comics theater, which is very popular now, but discussion on old romance comics, new romance comics, romances in comics. I'm one of the four hosts, Siskoid, and with me are Fern.
Hey.
Marty.
Hello.
And Bass.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about, it's actually a listener request.
Ooh.
In the wake of Crimson Peak. So it's an old request. It's an older request last year.
We do this in timely fashion.
Yes. They wanted us to talk about gothic romance and a gothic romance comic, which we will do. We'll be covering The Sinister House of Secret Love, number 3. But we'll also be talking about gothic romance in general. What do we mean by gothic romance? What does it mean, Marty? Gothic romance.
Gothic romance.
Well, you're the horror buff.
Yeah, sure. Well, a gothic romance doesn't necessarily have to do with horror, but
it's more of a mystery.
Yeah, sure.
It can be a mystery element.
Yeah,
a lot of suspense.
Some supernatural elements. It depends. Mm-hmm. Popularized in the 1800s
by the Gothics.
The Goths. The Visigoths.
These are like Bram Stoker and Mary Shelley and these people, right?
Yeah. The actual Goths that would, rape and pillage across middle Europe.
Visigoth romance was not popular.
Yeah, not as popular.
No, not as popular.
Okay, so those are horror, like Shelley and Stoker did do horror-ish, more horror. Mm-hmm. But it also includes things like Wuthering Heights or Jane Eyre. Romance, they're really romance novels.
Right, yeah.
But with a mystery element. What I like about the certain branch of gothic romance is that it feels like it's going to be a horror story. It's kind of told as a horror story.
Yeah.
There's a mysterious element that feels like we're waiting for the twist, and the twist will be horror. But then the twist kind of explains why it's not, except in the point of view of the heroine, it still is.
So, a classic example would be Sleepy Hollow.
Okay.
Where the story always teases of the Headless Horseman, and there's a potential romance, and at the end, it's kind of, you're not sure if it's real or not, or if there's a Headless Horseman, but it probably isn't if you actually just read the text, but...
Phantom of the Opera could also qualify.
Phantom of the Opera...
Is he actually a fandom? Is there an opera? Are these elements in this story? Is there a phantom? Is there an opera?
The truth would surprise you. What did you study for?
I studied, let's see.
I'm asking because everyone else has for sure an arts background.
Well, my first 2 years of university, I mostly studied Medieval Madness, which was in the student lounge. It was about 25 cents each try for the pinball, and I had my name on that thing everywhere. So, yeah. I was really good at Medieval Madness pinball.
But business, right?
Yeah.
Business pinball.
Yeah, business.
Okay.
But yeah, Phantom of the Opera, it's kind of weird because I think it became a gothic romance because if you read the original novel, it's more of a pulp mystery type thing. Because if I remember correctly, it's just this cop trying to figure out why the chandelier fell on someone.
Mm-hmm. It is written more as kind of a detective.
Yeah, it's a pulpy mystery kind of story, and then I think once the Broadway musical came about, that's what we know now.
Yeah.
As more romance.
That's where the
Half Mask began.
Half Mask was because of Lon Chaney, because they wanted to keep the grotesque, you know, side of his face. And back then, they didn't have awesome prosthetics and CGI.
No.
So it was all makeup. But they can't have the full mask on and keep the stage makeup there.
Well,
so
I'm pretty sure that
Half Mask, and it was like, okay.
No, I'm pretty sure the half mask only exists for the Broadway because they need the mic.
That might not.
Because the mic didn't fit under the mask and stuff.
But these back to the novels and
stories. Books. Stories, yes.
They're kind of like a style, right? They like in the movies, there's this noir. Just because of Jessica Jones, we kind of rekindled that noir flame there where we have this style of telling the story, and this is a way to tell it like it's a horror comedy or a horror comedy.
Jane Eyre.
But the horror is really in
pretzels.
in how the narrative perceives.
Yeah, well, right? It's like the characters believe they're in a horror story because they believe in the supernatural.
Yeah,
right.
And it's creepy, and they are anxious. Like Jane Eyre is my perfect example.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially if we're going to talk about romance, gothic romance. And it's a lot like Crimson Peak. It came out of Martin Gray's suggestion that we talk about Crimson Peak or something like Crimson Peak.
Crimson Peak was the perfect example of people kind of mixing up horror and the gothic. Because Crimson Peak, in the commercials and all the advertisements, like, hey, the next horror movie by Del Toro. And he kept saying on social media, it's not a horror movie, people. It's a gothic romance.
We don't know what that means.
Yeah, what does that mean? I don't think it was hard to sell. And it truly was just a gothic romance.
It feels very much like Jane Eyre because you've got a young woman going to live in a large, creepy castle.
I haven't seen it yet.
Is it good?
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of story as Jane Eyre, and even more extreme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another example would be House of the Seven Gables by, what is his name, who wrote The Scarlet Letter?
Nathaniel Hawthorne?
Yeah, Nathaniel Hawthorne. House of the Seven Gables, the same thing, where, you know, it's Americanized instead of a castle, it's a big house. They get a big house, might be haunted, it may be, and then there's a romance, and then it never truly tells you if there's a ghost, or if it is haunted, or if there is a family curse.
Right.
In the end, the romance because solves everything.
In Jane Eyre, 300-year-old spoiler...
It's not a spoiler. It's required reading if you're
the house isn't actually haunted except the ghost is the ghost of the past. I mean, it's metaphorical.
Which they even say in Crimson Peak spoilers, they're like, oh, there's a ghost in your like the girl in the story writes stories. They're like, there's a ghost in the story, so it's horror. No, the ghost is our metaphor.
that's what it is, right?
So when we're talking about gothic romance, although the word romance did not mean romance like love affairs originally, it just meant
story in a book.
Story in a book.
Yeah.
But the gothic romance with romance in it was, you know, very much developed by female, like the first women novelists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it does have that aura and. So there's a connection between gothic romance back then and just plain romance today. If the characters are particularly tortured, if the man is actually bad for the woman, you know, kind of violent, but yet she's drawn to him anyways. Those are all gothic romance elements from those early novels that are still in literature today. So like Fifty Shades of Grey is a gothic romance.
It is.
Isn't it?
It is.
Well, look. We just twisted that. I will say this. There is a line where he goes... I can't fix you in a plane. Well, then what's left? Gothic romance.
Is that an actual quote from the film?
Something like that, yes. I have not seen it. I have friends who have seen it.
Something like that not be a quote.
Your answer would be no.
Guys, we're just not the audience for this. Romance comics, that's our thing.
Yeah,
we get it.
Oh, man. But this is the genre we're looking at. And in romance comics, very few romance comics were actually could be called gothic romance. Usually it was relationshipy things. Mm-hmm. We've seen them in our own theaters, you know, lots of stories like that. Mm-hmm. But if there's a more supernatural element, then it's kind of strange one. Mm-hmm. And in the early 70s, when horror was big and romance was on very much on the decline, most of the romance comics were already dead. DC Comics tried, among others, but Charlton also had a Haunted Love book.
Ooh.
And DC started doing a couple of books that had that gothic romance, that had horror and romance elements together in it. The Sinister House of Secret Love was one, a horror suspense anthology comic book series. Mm-hmm. It ran from 72 to 74, but only the first four issues are called Sinister House of Secret Love, and then they changed it to Secrets of Sinister House. That's why it's confusing.
They took out the word love, though. That probably was a big issue.
Yeah, that's it. And so there
people
was
like
one
houses
more.
Houses better than love.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe someone got married.
Well, they loved houses too, because they also had their big anthology horror series were House of Secrets and House of Mystery. Mm. And then so they had Secrets of Sinister House, which also had its own host, like Cain and Abel, but a character called Eve.
Okay.
All three of them made comebacks in the
Sandman
series.
Secrets of Sinister House just sounds like something someone would say in a Revenge of the Nerds movie. Like, it's this one college frat house. Oh, that's Sinister House. We don't go there.
and they also had a book at the same time called Forbidden Tales of Dark Mansion.
Yeah.
DC was never really good at naming stuff, I think, because of Action Comics. Well, what is it? It's Action in Comics, okay? And they had a horror series just called Ghosts.
Yeah, it's just like we have this one comic where there are mysteries and people have to find out what it is. Let's call it Detective. All right,
House series, and
they were the first and the best.
Yeah, talented writers right there in the titles.
So really, after four issues of Forbidden Love, Secret Love, then Sinister House, the Forbidden Love of the House,
so Dark House, Dark Love.
So the Sinister House and Secret Love lasted four issues under that title.
Yes.
And then the fifth issue was also probably already commissioned, so it's also a gothic romance. Mm-hmm. And then it just went to straight horror suspense, just like
none of
that icky romance. And
the Addams Family had fallen out of favor.
Oh, man, I love the Addams Family.
And most of those, that is a gothic romance.
And under the original title, most of the stories were written by Michael Fleischer, who also wrote, like, reams and reams of Jonah Hex, for example.
Oh.
He's a big Jonah Hex writer, among other things.
Is he related to Max Fleischer?
No.
Damn.
I chose an issue, number three.
Yes.
It's a full-length story instead of little, very often anthology series will have more than one story. This one has a full-blown book novel.
Yeah.
And it's called Bride of the Falcon. Mm-hmm. I think it's a standout issue artistically of the series. Mm-hmm. It was written by Frank Robbins. It was drawn by Alex Toth. I believe that's how you pronounce it, even though it's the Egyptian god of death, Toth.
Yeah, and that guy that melts at the end of Raiders.
Okay. Alex Toth is a huge figure in comic book art. He's done a lot of things, and his style is very, very specific and interesting, and I think it's a gorgeous-looking issue.
It is a gorgeous-looking issue.
Yeah. Amazing.
And he's inked here by Frank Giacoya, which is another of those Jack Kirby inkers. So he's got a very heavy line, but makes it kind of designy here. Mm-hmm. But he kind of absorbs Toth's style a little bit. Toth isn't always this hard-edged or cartoony even, mm-hmm. but under Giacoya it is. So we're going to go through the issue chapter by chapter. It's a five-chapter story.
Yeah. Five chapters!
I wrote a little summary, but maybe we can just talk about the cover. And we can start talking about the cover and generally the art before we get into the story itself. So what did you think?
That cover reminded me a lot of like Nancy Drew books.
Yeah, I was thinking of the same thing.
So it's a painted cover. We've got the haunted house in the background at night. There's a gondolier on the river in shadow and a blonde woman looking straight at us with a candle. And then and the whole cover is just, it's white with an oval through which we see this painted scene.
And the title's at the bottom, The Bride of the Falcon.
And it says Cassie knew she would die unless she discovered what secret curse prevented her from becoming the Bride of the Falcon.
It's a good-looking cover.
Yeah, but I mean, it's
amazing. Although it looks like a book cover, that's not a comic cover. That's what's, like, interesting about it.
Yeah.
It totally looks like a book cover.
They probably were aiming to to get somebody older. It's not like a kiddie type thing. So
yeah, exactly.
And maybe the same people who bought Harlequin Romance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really.
Plus, that's it's five chapters. It's a pretty long comic.
It's a 52-page.
That's big.
Book. Just because it's a gothic type thing, in my mind, when I was reading it, every title was read in the style of Vincent Price.
Right. Oh, yeah, no, definitely.
Ride the Falcon.
Yeah. No, I agree, because reading this, I could just imagine Vincent Price in his, like, Masterpiece Theater leather-bound chair filled in a room filled with books.
And I drank tea while I was reading this.
Yeah, and it's going to be, like, the whole story seems to be taking place during a thunderstorm, the whole thing.
Yeah, it felt kind of dark and stormy.
It was very atmospheric, and it's just great.
Like, every time I see Italy in comics, it's always gloomy and dark and thunderstorms. Italy in comics is a rough place. Like,
much more so than
name one comic story where Italy's fun. Like, never.
It's true, because in comics it's exactly as you describe it, but then if you go into a movie, you got Roman Holiday where everyone's on a scooter going chow.
Yeah, but in comics there's always some monster in the water or lightning in the castle. Like,
lightning in the castle. You open the door.
Yeah, count lightning.
Well, it certainly was romantic. So, you know, it lends itself nicely to a romance.
What's fun about the art, too, you can really tell it's from the 70s.
Oh, yeah, which she's fashionable.
Yeah, she's 70s fashionable. Which is fun, because most gothic romance was written back further than that. So
would have been Victorian.
Yeah, you always imagine a Victorian gothic romance like thing. Even Crimson Peak, he went for Victorian-type feel. And then we have this one where it's like, hey, gothic romance in the modern era.
She's got those knee high boots.
Yeah. Hey, you don't see that. You don't see that.
But you actually kind of see the transition towards, in the book, I'm saying, that we see the transition towards this Victorian type. Because we go from what I call Candyland, because there are these... I'm starting to talk about the first chapter there. We see these, like, things where, you know, that's where the gondolas go, and they have these white...
Barber poles.
And it looks like candy. Yeah. You know, so you're out of Candyland. You're out of the little, you know, this nice little...
Yeah, and Kathy, the heroine, Kathy, is fashionable. She's in go-go boots. You know, she's a girl from today. And she's going to go into a world...
She is going there.
Of Italian aristocracy, gloomy castles, remote islands... And it's kind of it's a trip through time.
Yeah, it is.
Especially since it's going to be taking place in Venice, where there is a certain, I mean, it's an older city, obviously. Yeah. One of the cradles of modern civilization, the Renaissance. And people are still, you know, you can still take boat rides in gondolas. It's so there's still an old-timey...
Have you said gondolas or gondolas?
Gondolas.
I thought it was gondolas.
I don't know. I speak French. It's a gondola.
Go with that.
It's a gondola.
Sometimes we're not going to be putting accents on the right places.
All right.
Yeah, we might say... emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Thermometer.
Maybe gondola. The wrong syllable.
That's it. That's what
did you say was?
We need
gondolas?
We need a new Looney Tunes character. Speedy Gondola.
He's Italian.
He's just zipping around on scooter. Yeah.
So what's the word there?
Gondolas.
Gondolas.
Okay, we got to sit back on the gun.
I believe it's a soft A, so it should be gondole.
All right.
It's a soft G.
So
it's
primer. Gondole. Primer for all our Anglo friends who are listening. One of the things in French, we don't have actual accents on syllables.
No, we don't.
That's not how it works. So that's why we always put accents on the wrong
syllables.
Okay. So
what's a syllable?
What is a syllable?
Probably something.
it's something you transport in a gondola. All
right. Let's get through the summary. Chapter 1. In chapter 1, we meet Kathy Harwood on a windswept Venetian dock with her small dog Pooge. This is an unfortunate name. Trying to get a gondolier to take her to Isola Tranquillo, the island of tranquility, but veterans of the waterways know better than to foolishly take her there. In flashback, we see how, as a magazine proofreader, she came across a personals ad placed by an Italian count, Lorenzo Dufalco, a so-called misfit seeking someone to love. It brings her to tears, and now here she is. But Tranquillo also means dead, and the gondoliers are spooked. Finally, a young man called Roberto agrees to take her, and once again she remembers their correspondence, how mad she felt when he finally wrote her the word amore and immediately ran to Venice. So that's our setup.
She's a love-crazed little lady.
Yeah. I also loved how I think she's really happy about her name, because she kept saying her own name over and over again in the first chapter.
Kathy Hardwood.
Yeah, my name's Kathy Hardwood. Not me, Kathy Hardwood.
I think that's a comic book conceit. She's alone, she has to... Who is this person?
But she said it like one too many times.
Oh yeah.
It's like, we get it, Kathy.
I felt the same way.
Yeah. I like in that first panel, that gondolier is essentially a Danny Trejo.
Yeah. Are you going, Pendejo? Like,
he's old.
Where are you going? But, I mean, it's everything is set up quite nicely in the first page.
Yeah.
Right? The mood, everything.
Yeah.
And then we have this nice little flashback to the city life with her friend.
Yeah. It's very fascinating.
It sets up the classic gothic trope of the new world clashing with
the old
rotting old world.
Yes.
I love that you put in rotting there.
No, it's true.
Yeah,
it is.
Gothic, it's always about that. It's always...
like, the decay of society.
The decay of the old guys.
The Brits were losing their empire.
Yeah.
Empire no longer. but I love the Alex Toth artwork, for sure.
It's great.
It's amazing. The play of shadows and light. Like, Kathy is a light figure.
Yeah, she's very illuminated.
Blonde, dressed in orange, with a white dog.
Pooge.
I love Pooge.
I don't know about Pooge.
It really looks like the Wizard of Oz in a certain...
Yeah.
In some aspects. Yeah. You know, she's nice, light, and fluffy, and she has this nice little dog.
Yeah, or also could be very much like Tintin, because he was blonde, and he had a white dog.
Yeah, but...
And he was very go-getter, adventurous.
Tintin, he was, like, going places to, you know, report stuff. She's going to be swept away.
He was going places to shoot minorities. He was a reporter, but I've never seen him print any goddamn story, and I had all of those books.
I didn't even know he was a reporter. I think I could show you panels. People read his stories.
He made his own stories, you know?
But yeah.
Someone shot up this castle. Who did it? We don't know.
They were coming right for me.
But yeah, I thought, well, this is very... I think it's because of the white dog. Toto is not...
Do you think Toto would have been that popular? Well, his name was Pooge.
He wasn't even white. He was like a little terrier.
Yeah, he was a little black terrier.
But, you know, she's going around with her little... And she's going to be swept away to somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's alien, right?
We don't linger on Venice. It's not like Venice, this beautiful European city. It's a dock.
Yeah.
And it's raining. It's dark. It's overcast.
And I think that actually helps to set the mood, because Venice, traditionally, it's a very beautiful city. It's very classical. There's art. It's part of the Renaissance. You know,
Did Mozart live there?
Yeah, for a while. You know, people think Italy, Venice, they immediately go, oh, it's just wonderful culture. Blinds, you know, there's vertical and horizontal.
Oh, that's where James Bond's girlfriend dies.
Yes. And that was tragic, but it was an amazing scene shot in full hard light, so that was cool. Not that she died, but still. I mean, okay. Anyways.
Actually, she dies underwater, so it's not full hard light. The moment of death is...
Anyways.
Spoilers.
It's a 14-year-old movie. There are no spoilers after 14
years. It's Casino Royale.
It's like 10 years ago.
Yeah, as it came out, it was 6.
So it's, you can't spoil something that's, you know, 20 years old.
Anyways, we have this wonderful, beautiful city that everyone knows is wonderful and beautiful. We don't even see it in the comic. It's just like the corner of a dock pointing towards a really shitty lake, and there's a tower in the middle, and everything's scary, and there's lightning crashing.
Also, we never see it.
Also, did anyone check if tranquilo actually means silence? I'm pretty sure it's tranquil.
Does it mean death too? No. I believe it should be Ila, not Isola, and it should be Tranquillo. Now, this is my...
I don't know. You know what? I just thought, you know, suspension of whatever they tell me.
Yes. I think on a translation scale, this is like a 7 out of 10. Yeah. So it's like, okay, this is passable.
It basically means, what she seems to be saying in pidgin Italian is isolated tranquility.
Right.
That's what we're supposed to get.
It should be Island of Peace, But then the guy says, no, this is Dead Island. But I actually own that game.
I keep mixing up Spanish and Italian anyway. So,
yeah. Well, they're very similar.
Yeah, obviously. So I go Islanda.
Yeah.
Islanda.
So that's not it. But, like, she's already in an old-fashioned relationship because they're pen pals for a while.
And they're in love while they're just writing to
each other. Yeah, we see there's a this, like... symbolic shot of letters flying across the ocean with hearts and hands,
and she has this.
I love that shot where she's like reeling.
She's
of
like
joy.
She's in her baby doll.
I think she's kissing the letter. See,
she is kissing. This is like an explosion of inner passion power. Right?
Yeah,
it's very anime-ish. Like
lyrical dance meets anime meets,
and very sexy too. I mean, it's a see-through baby doll. Who doesn't like that?
You don't go to bed wearing that for no reason.
She wanted to dress up to read the letter
and respond.
And you know what? If somebody dresses up to read a letter, I mean, it's going to be a good letter.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely.
And then you really have the contrast as she arrives with the gondolier to the island with the tall ramparts of the castle. And there's like that splash of ocean spray.
Yeah. It looks like the castle's a ghost. It just keeps purposefully doing that kind of supernatural thing where, you know, you're going to hell.
Yeah. And you know, there's like this contrast where in the upper panel, there are like hearts. The contour of the panel, it's all hearts and it's all love. Mm-hmm. And down here, where the castle is, we have these hash marks. I mean, that's on purpose.
Yeah,
it's on
the cross-hatching. Yeah.
I thought it would look like hearkening to cobwebs and stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. Kind of gives up.
Because we can't have a gothic story without a crumbling castle or house.
It seems like the panel is kind of crumbling. The art in this is great. I love it.
Yeah.
So then we get to chapter 2. Ooh. And we're going to let Romance Comics Theater take it from here. Well, until the end of the chapter.
Okay.
Bride of the Falcon, Chapter 2, Journey's End.
Early on in our courtship correspondence, I wrote Lorenzo of my infirmity, simply and directly, and in return, Lorenzo sent me a photo of himself with an enigmatic note.
This picture favors my good side. It tells but half the story. In this, and only this respect, I am half a man. All my love, Lorenzo.
I didn't know it then, but as he told me later, he too was apprehensive about our fated meeting. He, Count Lorenzo de Falco, master of Castle de Falco, Castle of the Falcon, was this to be his only withheld mystery? The unseen half of his handsome face? No matter. Soon, I'll know.
No one is here. Were you expected, Signorina?
Yes. Ring the bell, Roberto. The vibrations from that ancient bell coursed through my body like a death knell, and as if Roberto had read my mind, he offered,
You are right, Signorina. Such a bell would surely wake the dead. I'll go now, and while I've never feared the unknown, I do fear the fierce falcons, the Count's watchdogs of his Castel de Falco. Ciao, Signorina. May your visit be blessed with good fortune.
Suddenly, after what seemed like an eternity, I saw him. We both stopped, poised, breathless, in this frozen moment of our enjoyed lives, plunging ahead through all my doubts and fears like the fog around us, and I fell into his arms, secure and safe, in a lightning and thunder salute to our love's first embrace. Our lips sought each other and met. Lorenzo, dearest, all that you wrote me from deep inside your heart, is it true? You've accepted me, despite
your impaired hearing, cara mia, those damaged nerves that keep you from hearing my words of love. Oh yes, Kathy.
Dear Lorenzo, there was a time when I could hear such words of love from the only other man I ever loved, till his horrible racing accident stilled his lips, ending his life and my hearing as I tried to shut out those last terrible moments of his death.
Or perhaps because you wish never to hear such words of love from another, fearing the guilt of betraying him, even though he was dead. No matter now, perhaps together we can quiet your fear. Until then, your hearing loss may prove to be a blessing. But now you also must know my infirmity. By seeing it, you must see it. If you are to know the entire man, your sad Lorenzo.
What? Oh! A falcon!
My channeled pet Charisma, a treacherous species from which one should not expect any loyalty. any more than from some women.
Oh, Lorenzo, you've been hurt more deeply than your scars can show.
Perhaps, but no one can hurt me ever again. Not now that you are mine.
Suddenly all the pain of doubt and apprehension was swept up with the wind and rain around us when Lorenzo said,
We will marry. Of course, we must wait for a while.
Yes, dearest, I know. The church requires delay.
Then the time needed for my dear mother to know and love you, as I do. I'm sure you heard how jealous our Italian mothers are for their only sons.
Your last letter explained why you couldn't leave your mother to meet me at the airport. Has she improved any?
Alas, no. She seems to get worse every day, despite the efforts of Europe's best doctors. There's no hope left. It's a miracle that she survived her last stroke at all. But she is a true Di Falco, strong, determined to live.
Now she'll have a better chance with Signorina Harwood here, eh, Signore?
Silence, peasant! Speak only when you are spoken to.
Lorenzo, why were you so harsh to him? He was only...
Bah, he's stupid. Like the old staff I fired before you came for not knowing their place.
You fired them? But why?
To start afresh with you. To sweep away all the old cobwebs of a tortured past. Yes, that's why.
Cautioning me not to be shocked by the ravaged appearance of a once beautiful woman, we entered his mother's room.
Madre mia, we do not disturb, do we? She hears but cannot reply, her vocal cords paralyzed. Mother, this is my bride-to-be, Signorina Cathy Harwood, of whom I've spoken so often. See, her eyes light up, can't speak, but has eyes keen as a prime falcon's. Mother will be a proper chaperone till we wed, Cathy, to avoid our being indiscreet. Eh, madre mia, in fact, my fondest hope is for you to become close friends.
I'd like that, Lorenzo, very much, but with her inability to speak, even my lip-reading ability won't help.
Ha! Aren't we the trio macabre? Hear no evil, see, but tell no evil.
You're still being bitter, Lorenzo. We agreed to forget all that now, didn't we? And besides, I have an idea of how I can help after all. If I could take over her feeding and medication...
Ah, bellissima mia. Would you? I'd never have dared ask you to.
And so my new life began. Trying to win the love of Lorenzo's mother, but not without arousing some resentment from Angelina, a simple peasant girl who felt I was usurping her rightful place and duties, and made sure I was aware of it. Angelina instructed me on how to care for the Contessa, in less than subtle ways, but also helping me in his sweet, unobstructive manner, was dear Lorenzo.
Excuse me, Signorina, but the sun shining in the eyes of the Contessa, who cannot complain? Is unpleasant, see?
Perhaps if the maidservant acquainted our guest with the needs of my mother beforehand.
And Lorenzo helped me in so many other thoughtful ways.
It's always better to put her medicine in the milk. Better for mother, as it will taste less bitter.
Yes, dear. Of course. And then there were the blissful moments where we strolled the once stately grounds, and dear Lorenzo confided his dreams for our future.
One day, hopefully soon, bellissima, all this will be restored to its original splendor. A true palazzo, to house the new Contessa of the Castel Di Falco. If only your campaign to win mothers over to our marriage were proceeding more swiftly.
She still gives no sign of approval, does she? Oh, I've tried so hard to win her confidence. Once again, that feeling of insecurity crept over me. I needed new reassurances, which only Lorenzo could give to me. Lorenzo, you're not thinking, that we may have to wait until she... your mother...
dies. We mustn't close our eyes to reality, cara mia.
Oh, dear Lorenzo, I don't want to think that way. It's just that I've waited eternities for a love like ours to be.
Yet you're really saying I'm mama's boy, and wouldn't defy her to marry you.
As always, you're honest. Painfully so. Yes, that was what I was thinking. Oh, but I love you so. I'd do anything not to lose your love.
Anything.
Blood of the Falcon continued on the second page following.
Cathy Harwood, played by Amélie Montour. Thanks again. All Italian voices by Siskoid, unfortunately.
Bravo.
Bravo.
Well, amazing. Well spoken.
I especially like that one character.
Oh,
You know what you did with that thing with your voice?
It's bellissimo. Thank you.
This is what happens when we haven't had the theater yet. Okay, so...
Stop ruining the magic, Mike.
Look behind the veil. So...
The costumes were amazing. I know you, at home you can't see them, but yeah, wow.
The costumes were great.
Yeah. So we meet Lorenzo finally. Mm. DeFalco.
Lorenzo. He looks... Honestly, he looks like an old Superman. Clark. He looks like old Clark Kent.
He's got that hair.
Yeah. Old, angry Clark Kent.
He looks like he's one frilly scarf away from being Vincent Price in the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari or Dr. Strange.
And I kind of felt he looked like iVampire. So because he does have those... Yes, he's dressed in Victoriana kind of thing. The big coat.
Big cloak.
And
he could be a villain for Scooby-Doo.
And he could be a... I mean, it's kind of played like he's a vampire or some other supernatural being. Yeah. The big shocker, though, is that Kathy is apparently deaf.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we find out in
that's
this.
That's why letters are so good for her.
Right. And, although it's surprising because she doesn't mention it in the first part. She never says, I'm Kathy Harwood. Mm-hmm.
Deaf girl from New York.
But also, you know, she's in a scene with one of her friends, and her friend is telling her, go for it. But they're not looking at each other, so she's just... She can't
it's not
that.
Actually her friend. She's just someone commenting.
Yeah, she just wants her job.
She's a coworker. Said, no, go for it. Then I can have the corner office.
Hey, it's hard for a black woman in the 70s. So.
You just take care of the justice, and I'll handle the revenge myself.
It was.
Yeah. So her deafness is interesting because it's a hysterical deafness.
It's hilarious. it's super wacky deafness.
Her boyfriend dies in a car. He's a car racer.
You know, I don't.
Was it cars?
Look,
it looks like planes.
It looks like a.
It was a train.
it's either a plane, a train, or an automobile.
It's a plane. So he dies in
like those races they have in the Rocketeer planes, right? For some reason,
he's cool. A snowbird.
Her boyfriend's with a Rocketeer.
Maybe. This is a.
I don't think this is something that exists. Plane
racing.
Have you seen the Rocketeer?
I've seen the Rocketeer. That's not a historical.
Again,
I'm not talking about the bit where he has a jetpack on his back. I'm talking about where they race planes.
Plane races were always more of a European thing.
Okay.
In London, they used to do them a lot.
I didn't know that was a real.
It was never
thing.
Really a thing in America. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but.
It's a horrible racing accident.
Yeah.
It's planes. It's at an airfield.
But you know what? On this page, on page, what is this? Page 10?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I couldn't stop thinking that the last panel of page 10 should have been the reverse panel, the first, or like a bigger panel on page 11. Like the reveal is ugh. We see Lorenzo's face for the first time, but we see it from, we see it all the time because it's on the panel. It should have been on the reverse.
When you turn the page would you see it.
I was like, this design of this just six square, it was horrible. I didn't like that because I really liked this. The other page 9 was all nice and gloomy with the like electricity type thing.
And lightning behind
them. Yeah, but this is like, it's electricity because, you know,
it's dark, but it's tense.
And it keeps hiding that side of his face.
And it keeps hiding, but we see it. As soon as we turn the page, we see what he looks like.
Yeah.
So the reveal is kind of botched. Right.
So Lorenzo, it has those three scratch marks that even...
And busted
probably
eye.
Bust his eye. He's got a lazy
it's
eye.
It's not right that there. Bad. I mean, it's
it,
not
it looks
horrible.
Like he got into a scrap with Wolverine, but he's no worse for wear.
It's kind of like did you guys see the...
But this is his reason for...
Right.
For thinking he's a misfit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you guys see the Gerard Butler version of Phantom of the Opera?
Yes, I did.
Where his face is basically just kind of a rash, just not that bad.
It's
it's kind of like, it's not that bad, it's just a scratch.
I don't know, I think he's, this guy, Lorenzo, he's missing an eye.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of like a dead socket?
This guy has a lot harder than Gerard Butler.
Don't forget, this guy's from Italy.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be Purdy.
Italian
guy.
Yeah.
He's not Purdy.
He's he's a count. He's got some rough features, but you know, he still looks handsome. You know, he probably dresses well.
Like I said,
he probably owns a horse and a sword. I mean, this guy has it going.
But he is kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
He's kind of a jerk. Okay, well, we know the end of the story.
What's the backhanded compliment he gives when they introduces this falcon? He's like, falcons are like women. You can't trust them.
You should not expect any loyalty
from a falcon, just like some women. Yes. So he's still progressive in that he's not just throwing all women
underneath
the
bus. Are we seeing foreshadowing?
He's so progressive that he calls his manservant, he calls his butler, peasant. Yes. Silent peasant.
Silence.
I mean,
well, peasant. we'll see why later.
Wait, here,
on.
Also.
Yes.
You can't call anyone peasants anymore. It's the 70s.
But on his island, it's like this little...
To be fair, he probably called them paisano. But, you know...
Right, you guys are.
But it adds to that time travel element.
Yeah,
where we are in the past where he's an old time.
I love that panel of what's Pooch's or Dooch's?
Pooch.
Pooch's face is just like Pooch's nose. He's like, what is this?
He knows something is wrong.
What is this? That face is just like, ugh.
That dog knows something is wrong.
Well, yeah, because the dog's not love blind. Kathy's love blind.
Yeah. Also, the dog isn't deaf.
Probably not.
You know that,
well, dogs understand what we're saying through tone.
Yeah,
and she doesn't hear his tone, but maybe his tone is actually hard. Right,
regardless of that,
regardless of what the theater did with it.
And he might have his back to her, going, "I'm gonna kill this broad." She doesn't know. She can't read his lips.
Yeah, she can. That's her.
Yeah,
trick.
But
she can read lips.
Right. If he has his back to her, I'm gonna kill this broad.
With a thick southern accent.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a hat out of her hair.
That's not what happens later.
That's not.
No, okay, no. So and we also meet the old woman, the paralyzed old woman. Everybody's got an infirmity. In this story,
everybody's broken. Yeah.
So we meet that old woman. She's in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. She can't move. She can only move her finger and eyelid.
And Lorenzo shows Kathy how to put her medicine in milk, and that she should do this every day.
All this time, this Lorenzo guy. I mean, I have red flags going all over the
place. Oh, yeah.
Because what he does after he shows her how to take care of his mom, they go out to the garden, and for some odd reason, he turns stuff on her, right? They're talking about how they love each other and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, he says, well, you have to win my mother's heart. And she's like, oh, but I don't know if I can. And he goes, are you saying I should go against my mother's will? And that's not at all what she said. He just turned stuff on her. He's very abusive.
I think this guy was better in letters because he needs time to think about what he's going to say. Without letters, just to go, argh! He screams at people.
I know.
Letters are the older version of what people do on the internet today.
Yeah.
You can lie on the internet.
Yeah, you can woo people.
Well, because that's what basically happened. That was a personals ad. Personals ad.
Essentially, it was like Tinder, just less environment friendly because it had printed on paper.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know a lot of guys.
He slides pictures into the trash can.
You know, this phone probably took like 10 trees to make, but how many times did they kill like acres of trees to put my little square of, hey, you know, I'm sad. Come see me.
Personal ads are like Craigslist.
Yeah.
For people who don't understand newspapers.
And I think here in the... towards the end of the second chapter, they're trying to make us feel paranoid. There's always people in the picture. The butler's there. The maid is there. It's like they are being watched, but you don't know why this is happening. Why this is sinister, but you're not sure why.
Right. Yeah. Like, the story is mainly gearing us to be wary of the camp. Like, we get red flags, like, we know there's something wrong. But in these panels, especially the way he treats his staff, but then we see the butler just barely off frame, we see the silhouette of the maid, like, she's just jet black, like, she's clearly skulking. What are they saying about them? Is he setting off these red flags because, well, you know, wait, maybe he's a prisoner of this castle and they're the puppets or whatever?
Yeah.
Or, you know, are...
Maybe the butler loves him?
Who knows?
Jealous?
It's just this weird extra angle of mystery and suspense that just...
Yeah. I also had the feeling that maybe they knew the truth, whatever the truth is, they knew it, and they were sort of anxious of the fact that he brought in maybe another of several women to the castle, and what would happen to this young girl.
Up to this point, I thought these people were vampires. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yep. In Chapter 3, Lorenzo tells...
Wait. Just before we get to Chapter 3, I want to mention a $2 Raquel Welch pillow signed
you know what?
Up.
Did I you, have did you this win? Too. Yes. This is give incredible.
Me go to the bathroom.
I need to buy a Raquel Welch... Have you seen...
$2! That is an
Raquel
amazing...
Raquel Welch pillow.
You know what? I would buy a Raquel Welch pillow of her today.
Oh my God.
She's amazing.
Google Raquel Welch 1972.
All right, let's
you
do
will
this.
Not be disappointed. She was a beautiful woman. She still is, actually.
Oh, I'm pretty sure.
And she's a great artist. But oh my Lord, that was a beautiful woman.
The look on Mike's face right now is just worth the price.
I'm just afraid of the volume level is so high that it'll make
you
the,
can chop
the recording will be peak.
You can chop it out. What I like is how they sell being a peeping Tom also.
It's just
buy
amazing.
The secret secret spy scope and look at ladies in their underwear. This is funny. I love these. You're so not right. Smoke clouds. Muscles of steel. Surprise package. Magic cards.
Oh, and they had magic cards back then?
And my favorite
one.
My favorite. X-ray specs. Only $1.
Look at this. Humana, 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 humana.
Oh, she's a... She was
just... Hello. Hello.
And I mean, she's a great... She does art also. Like, not just acting. She just, like, does... paintings and stuff, and it's very nice. She's a
Paige Doctor. I am in love.
She is quite fetching.
Hello, Dolly.
You want to buy onion gum, Fern? Would you like some onion gum,
how
Fern?
Much? How much?
I can get you just by mailing in. I can get you some onion gum.
Okay.
Looks
okay.
Like real chewing gum.
Okay.
Tastes like onions. It's too funny. Five slices to a pack.
And Marty's back.
Yay.
That's the end of the commercial break.
Only 20 cents.
20 cents? 20 and cents. A Raquel Welch pillow for $2?
Right. Chapter 3. Lorenzo tells Kathy that she must do everything to make sure his mother doesn't come between them. Mm. For she runs Castel del Falco, despite her paralysis. The snooping butler immediately sends a passenger pigeon to the shore with a message. But what is it? Not long after, Kathy brews the old woman's medicine when Pooj makes her knock the glass of milk over and starts lapping it up. She chases him off. But he never returns. She later finds him in the woods, dead. And given his wounds, she suspects Lorenzo's falcon. That's when Roberto comes up behind her and tells her she must leave the accursed island and flings accusations at her employer. But she isn't his employee, she's his betrothed. Roberto raves about how she can't possibly marry Lorenzo while the old woman lives. And he's about to explain when Lorenzo sicks his falcon on him and he plunges into the sea in a panic. That's Chapter 3.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought something was wrong with that milk.
The milk's gone bad.
For sure.
What's wrong for with sure. that milk?
Poison milk.
Poison milk. Of course.
Kind of like they kill the dog. I hate when they kill the dog.
But we don't see it, at least.
The dog probably couldn't run away, because that's probably what paralyzes the old lady.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to point out something that we've had in pretty much every one of our podcasts. She's not wearing a red dress. It is a red pantsuit, because it is the 70s. She's still fashionable, but, you know, this is where...
Red comes in.
Red comes in. She's wearing her red pantsuit. This is where she gets her superpower. Like, she needs this because she's in danger. It's like a symbiote. Like, the 90s Marvel symbiote stuff that Mike probably absolutely detests.
I am actually on record in an issue of Amazing Spider-Man raving about Venom, which is a great shame of mine.
What happened?
I've got a letter printed that just raves
was
about
it, was
Venom.
It a no, what happened that you don't like Venom anymore?
Oh, Venom's fine. Venom's okay.
Was it a dare? Like, you got to write this letter in Marvel? Yeah,
I think I wanted a letter printed.
So you just said, what, this will get it printed.
I wrote something kind of clever and they printed it.
Oh,
whatever.
Yeah. So yeah, red pantsuit.
Red.
There we go.
Red's back.
Yeah. Mm. So,
she looked good in it, too.
I kind of got weird mixed feelings about Roberto.
Yeah, like...
Shows up out of nowhere.
He shows up out of nowhere, but...
He's a gondola driver.
Like, he's the gondola driver. And is he in love with Lorenzo?
With Lorenzo or...
with Lorenzo or Kathy?
With Lorenzo.
Who is he jealous of?
Because he just met Kathy. He doesn't know Kathy.
But yeah, like, he proves doesn't know because he's like your employer. He thinks she works for him. And then she's like, no, I love him! And you can see, like, hand on his head, like... What?
Exactly.
I Lorenzo think, is my boyfriend.
I think that, you know what? This is my take on it, because it might not be the truth, but I think that, you know what? Roberto thought he was Lorenzo's lover. Mm. And when she said, no, I'm his lover, and everything just fell into place for Roberto. He was like, oh my God, he's telling everybody we're all just things to him? And that's how I felt.
Well, I didn't get a gay vibe from
Lorenzo is telling me I'm just his gondola driver.
I'm not saying he has a gay vibe. I'm saying he looks like a guy who was genuinely
into
in
dudes?
Love with Lorenzo.
At this point, we don't know.
I don't
we
see don't that.
Know, we don't know what's his stake.
He doesn't even meet Lorenzo. He just gets attacked by his falcon and then jumps in the water.
Well, what is he doing back there? Why is he in the woods? If it's not to be secretly
we'll find
meeting
out. But at this point, it's well. At this point, we can only infer that the passenger pigeon sent a message to Roberto.
We can.
Yes. The butler's like, "Hey, Lorenzo's free this afternoon. Come on over. He wants a ride in your mystery gondolier."
But I think we can fit. Like, I mean, the puzzle of he just tells her little random bits, but I think we can sort of already know what's happening, what the deal is, or at least part of the deal.
But I'm just saying, this is what I thought when I read it. I was like, wow!
Like, to me, this was already obvious that the old lady was somehow Lorenzo's wife.
Yeah.
And she's much older than he is, so I'm still thinking vampire. Like, he's an undead, and she's getting older, and he replaces his women.
Kind of a Dorian Gray situation. So instead of a painting, he's using their life force.
Yeah, or what is it? There's something... Isn't there like a book or a movie that's exactly like this, where the person gets older and his mother is actually his former wife, used to be his wife?
Isn't that like a cat person thing?
I can't remember the name. But you know, it's a trope. It's a trope I've seen where the immortal gets married and then eventually his wife becomes his mother in the story, and he recruits a new wife and so on.
Yeah.
So that's what it feels like right now. There's still that supernatural tinge to it.
Yeah, I at this point, I still thought they were vampires.
They're in sunlight.
In Chapter 4, Roberto appears to drown, and an unapologetic Lorenzo blames it on his jealousy. Like, it's an excuse.
Yeah.
And on the fact that the man was trespassing, and he's sorry for the dog, which his falcon no doubt killed while hunting. He promises to go bury poor Pooge, but his butler already has, and gets slapped down for it. Lorenzo proceeds to dig the dog up, while Kathy tries to put together what Roberto was trying to tell her, and she notices that the old woman isn't totally paralyzed. She can blink. So Kathy tries to question her, using her blinks to signify yes and no, but the old woman doesn't understand English. Lorenzo walks in and asks her a question, and she can hear it. Yeah. Her hearing is back. So she's had so many shocks that it like reversed her original shock.
Mm-hmm.
That's Chapter 4.
I do love the just... Oh, she can blink, and then Kathy starts asking her questions. But just this, it's very small attention to detail that, oh, she's Italian. Maybe she doesn't know English. There's this language barrier that the Count clearly, you know, speaks English, understands English.
Yeah.
And as many Europeans, they know 3-4 languages, which is amazing, whatever. And, you know,
whatever.
Maybe this lady speaks, you know, Italian, Spanish, and French, and English was next on her list, but then paralyzed. Whatever. So if Kathy spoke French and could blink in français, you know, maybe that would work. But how would you blink in French? I don't know.
With an accent.
just lazy eye.
One eye at a time. Because that's how we do it.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I completely get it. What I like is the clicking.
Yes.
Yeah, we saw that in the first chapter.
Yeah, we saw the clicking.
The ring against, like,
she's been
whatever.
Clicking for a while, and it only... And comes together in Chapter 5.
And it's, it's not about, it's not like Morse code or whatever. It's just like a desire to communicate something. Mm. So something has to be said.
That's like click, 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 click.
Yep.
And in this chapter, the clicking is there.
So what did you think the deal was with, oh, you already buried the dog, and I'm just going to put your lights out for doing that, and you presumptuous peasant?
Ah. Well, at that point, I thought, he wants to eat the dog? I don't know why.
Why does he want to bury the dog personally?
I have no idea.
Because the dog drank the milk.
The milk's gone bad.
There is that. If Kathy took it upon herself to conduct an autopsy and a drug screen,
She might discover the poisoned milk.
She is a newspaper...
Proofreader. So she does have attention to detail.
She does have attention to detail.
That's part of her character.
And she apparently works as a CSI.
Yeah, you know, she moonlights as a... On weekends, yeah. As a... You know, morgue forensic. Toxicologist, or you know, just you know. Well, apparently. I did my master's in toxicology, but I didn't really like it, so I went
on,
to
on dog toxicology because yeah, you know, people and dogs aren't really the same.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
You know, chocolate kills dogs.
I'm still sad about Pooge.
And oh, so is she because she's crying.
Yeah, but in this, she's very distraught.
But in the last panels,
she's crying because she can hear.
She's crying, and she has that red. Suit, and she gets her power. She can hear, and she hears bullshit. But, yeah. But she can...
You see, that actually brings an interesting fact, because if her deafness is psychosomatic because of her trauma from her dead boyfriend...
And appears to be.
Yeah. And I'm going with that's what happened.
Oh, yeah.
Technically, she heard everything, but... Her mind just kind of refuses it. So her subconscious heard everything. So when people are talking around her and she's not reading lips, she still hears it. She's just actively choosing not to.
She doesn't know she's hearing it.
It's not exactly how it works, though.
But it's still
you don't really
there.
Hear it.
But I think
it's not like your ears just go off.
I think the hearing and this the hearing is kind of metaphoric in this thing where she's love blind. She doesn't see anything, but she also refuses.
She's
to
love
hear.
Deaf.
Yeah,
she's love lost death. She's a deaf lady, but you know it's like she doesn't want to hear it. That's kind of the metaphor.
Yeah,
I was getting.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But if anyone in the audience is hysterically deaf,
yeah, well they're not listening to us
please,
right now.
Please tell us how does it actually work?
How does it work? Because we don't believe it does actually.
Although I'm not really sure what it brings extra to the story.
That she was deaf?
Yeah.
Well, it's the reason why she thinks she's damaged goods.
Yeah, still, though, it's...
It's her connection to the Count, where he's disfigured, she's deaf, so it's a form of disfigurement for her.
Probably lowers her self-esteem, and that's how people get manipulated.
But it's also, if she doesn't hear what's going on in the house, she never heard the tapping. I think that's the point of it.
Yeah, I think
she never heard that tapping. Now she's hearing the clicking. Like, the clicking's getting louder, and then she realizes, like in the start of chapter 5, she realizes the old woman is tapping. She can hear the wedding ring. The wedding ring, see? Mm-hmm. On the chair.
Yeah.
So it's a clue to the old woman's real identity, and it becomes the new way to communicate between them. Mm-hmm.
And I really like how these panels, they create a bigger suspense, because she hears him. We just kind of see him in the background. We see Lorenzo in the background saying, "No way, to what, Billy's Amia?" And she's like, "What, Lorenzo?" And she's not looking. She's like, "Oh my god, I heard him." But he's getting closer.
And she doesn't let on. She's not
exactly
responding.
She's staying put, but the camera's zooming slowly in. Mm-hmm. And we know he's coming from behind. And we don't know what's coming next.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's, just like, it's very...
this I really liked.
Hitchcockian.
Oh, yeah.
Framing.
And to this point, I still thought, he's a vampire.
Let's do chapter 5. Chapter 5 opens. Kathy doesn't let on that she's overcome her deafness. Her restored hearing does detect the old woman's tapping her wedding ring in a rhythm, however. Mm-hmm. And that rhythm is an SOS. While Lorenzo leaves to fetch the old woman's medicine, Kathy takes her cue from the tapping, takes the ring off, and reads the inscription inside, which proves that this is really Lorenzo's wife, not mother. Lorenzo catches her at it and confesses angrily. He married a rich old Contessa, but cheated on her with the maid, for example. And when caught with his pants down, she sicked the falcon, a wedding gift, on him, and it scratched his face. To make things worse, she would never divorce him. But her own venomous spite poisoned her, and she had a stroke, leading to her current state. He tormented her with the promise that he would see her dead and use his inheritance to remake his face. Enter Roberto, still alive and leading a squadron of policemen. Mm-hmm. He reveals that the dog was already dead from arsenic and that the falcon attack was used to cover it up. Further, that he's from Interpol, and has been investigating Lorenzo, and that the butler is, in fact, working with him.
Lorenzo flips him his bird. You know what I mean? Lorenzo flips him his bird and Roberto shoots it, but not before Lorenzo grabs the Contessa's wheelchair. The cops dare not shoot now, and races to the ramparts with her, intending to push her off. He does, but his scarf gets snagged in her wheels and he tumbles down to a watery death with her. Mm-hmm. And so Kathy leaves the island to a future bright with hope and with love. Not the end, just a new beginning.
And her hearing.
So a lot to go through here.
The Contessa is looking a lot like Angus Scrimm in that first panel. Which, unfortunately, he passed. He was the tall man.
He was the tall man.
Look, that is straight up Angus Scrimm.
Yeah, but certain frames, she looks like Aunt May. Like,
yeah.
In my head, every old lady in comics just looks like Aunt May. Because Aunt May has changed looks so many times over the years. It's like, Aunt May's everyone.
Would you like a cookie? Tall man.
So now we know the truth.
Yes.
I was surprised.
Not a vampire. I must say, that's a huge oversight for Lorenzo, not removing his wedding ring.
Yeah.
You'd think that would be like, let's take that off just for a few days.
It explains also why everybody's watching him, because everybody was on the inside with Interpol. So, you know, he's being abusive.
Yeah, it's all right. And see, it worked for you. You're like, vampires the whole time. It's supernatural. It's like, nope, cops.
This Interpol worse, twist cops. Is something that you would find in a John Philip Law B movie from Italy. It is great. it's great. Also, reverse Batman. The butler was a crime fighter. That's great. It's reverse Batman. Rich dude with a lot of money, just doesn't do shit all day. His butler's fighting crime.
And somewhere he wanted, like, Kathy?
Yeah.
He wanted Kathy to kill the old lady, because she was doing the medicine.
Yeah. Yep.
So then if the old woman dies, it's not by his hand.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. So he can frame Kathy. So that's her purpose. Yeah.
He can frame her. Because it kind of felt like maybe he just wanted to get the inheritance. Maybe still have a, you know, pretty attractive girlfriend out of it. You know, for him, it's win-win.
And she was deaf.
So
he could still run around on her.
Exactly.
He's more easily.
Yeah. He's the perfect douchebag.
Yeah. Yep. I felt like this one ended kind of almost like on the Tales of the Crypt levels of endings. Like, he dies by getting his scarf caught in her wheelchair. There's Interpol. It's a twist. It's really bad for him. Mm-hmm. Can't get any worse. But it's still actually kind of cool for everyone else.
I mean, it's melodramatic. But it is that kind of gothic romance ending that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Where... it wasn't supernatural after all. But it made us believe it was all the way through.
It's a big test of Occam's Razor.
Yeah.
Occam's Razor is
the worst Batman.
One of two ways to escape from Arkham Asylum. The Arkham Razor. Stop leaving it lying around.
Yeah. Or, you know, Arkham's revolving door, because that's what they have installed in front, apparently.
But Occam's Razor... basically, simplest answer is often the best one, right?
Usually the right one, yeah.
So, I mean, we're completely looking everywhere except the obvious, he married an old lady, wanted the money, and tried to get it.
Yeah, we're going, he's an immortal, only the wife is getting older. I mean, because we're trained to trust that kind of thing in genre.
And
you know, it's going to be a horror story.
It's not like we haven't seen those stories either.
No, we've seen them.
And there are some good stories that have that kind of twist as well.
And you know what? They're not always in comic books. Sometimes they're in, like, life.
Yeah.
We have these weird stories, and people, we like stories, and we create supernatural things. And this is one example of how we do this. It's an eye-opener, really.
Mm. You, Marty, were you disappointed with the non-supernatural ending?
No, I totally expected it, because the whole story is totally... by numbers gothic romance. Like, it's by... I saw it from a mile away. Like, I knew. It was totally, like... it's written by Americans, so it was American gothic romance. Okay. Going to the old world. And it's actually something to do with inheritance. Like, I saw it
from
a mile away.
But you read books, Marty. You read books.
I wish I could spoil Crimson Peak, but... it's a good companion piece for Crimson Peak.
Yeah. The thing that was probably the least believable was that the whole Roberto and Interpol thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that one comes out of left field.
And that's kind of supernatural.
So
he swam underwater.
No. Competent policeman.
Well,
that's supernatural.
Well, especially European.
But, I mean, it's not totally out of left field because he was the only one willing to go to the island.
Right, yeah.
He kind of appears out of magic.
So he watched her.
Yeah.
He said, oh, there's this girl that wants to go. They probably intercepted letters.
They probably read the correspondence.
So, yeah. He paid off all the gondoliers not to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because obviously gondoliers had to go there sometime.
No, yeah. Honestly, I think the gondoliers don't want to go.
No, but I don't think the island is self-sufficient. It must have, you know,
food
does come in.
I mean, then again, the owner of the island is a dude who just stands out on his balcony with his attack falcon on his head. So it's like, all right, so you got my shipment? Yeah, you got 3 seconds to get off your boat and then fuck out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm releasing no peepsy here because to go after your eyes.
When there are no defenses against falcons.
Because when they think he's killed Roberto with the falcon, he's like, he doesn't want to call the police.
No.
He's like, what happens on my island stays on my island.
Which is absolutely how it works.
I am the law.
At all. Yeah. Like, he probably pays taxes on that thing.
That's the old world trying to do their old way.
Exactly.
Right. Clashing with the new world. You can't just kill a dog and be like,
just kill a man, let alone the dog. Back then, dogs were still considered property.
Yeah. Well, the dog seems to be an accident.
Yeah.
It looks like an accident. It is an accident. He wasn't supposed to drink the milk.
The ending. This panel, right?
The very I like the panel where the Coast Guard.
This is very nice art, by the way.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
We've said it a lot, but I mean, it's a very beautiful.
Because here you've got, and it's sort of like the dawn, the orange dawn, where finally the sun is rising.
Yeah.
But it's still like gloomy, the shadows of morning. But you've got basically Kathy and Roberto in the policeman's boat, racing a gondolier that's taking two caskets of Lorenzo and his wife, Violetta.
I was going to say Lorenzi.
To shore,
Violetta.
So that's, and it's a like a silent panel. With Alex Toth, you can totally have silent panels.
Oh, yeah.
Essentially, this is like, you know what, this is the start of a new day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it also tells you, or at least from Kathy's perspective, because she's telling the story.
Right.
From her perspective, she and Roberto are now a couple.
Or they are at least very closer.
Yeah.
Like
In the picture, but she says, for me, it was a future bright with hope and with love. So it looks like she and Roberto are going to... Yeah.
Well, she's still lovesick. I mean, she wants to find love, and she's going to find love. So she's kind of still love blind, and she's all over the place, and Lorenzo was not the good guy. I mean,
he could rock a friendly cravat.
Yeah, and you know what?
He was a monster.
It's kind of satisfying also, because
it's his own doing.
Yeah, so it's very satisfying.
Yeah.
He still gets away with it. I mean, in the sense, he does kill his wife in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a murder there.
But at least he pays for it.
So he deserves it. Because before that, his falcon killed a dog, or the poison killed a dog, and then he had the falcon mutilate the dog, which isn't like a big crime.
No.
And he did not kill Roberto.
No.
No.
Old woman was in that situation because she had a stroke, because her own misbehaving. Well, so at that point, he was only an adulterer.
He was still bad. He was still a bad
person. And to be fair, like, she had a stroke, but he was feeding her in the comic dimension arsenic. That was pretty much slowly killing her and preventing her from ever recuperating from that stroke.
Well, it depends. Was he giving her that medicine, or did he start Kathy on it? So that he would always be guiltless.
I'm thinking Kathy. That's why.
Because the old woman was already paralyzed.
I'm thinking that he'd been doing it for a long while.
Well, he didn't need to. No, because she was paralyzed.
He replaced his whole staff, though.
With Interpol plants.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's what he said. He's like, I replaced the old staff. Because the old staff's the one he was cheating with, and the one that
actually the wife.
Yeah. But I mean, I felt like, manipulate yourself out of this one, asshole. That's what I thought when he fell off with the wheelchair. Because he's just like cunning and he's a predator.
And
right?
Everyone knows, apart from Kathy, that's his wife. Well, Kathy doesn't know. Everyone else knows. Cops know.
Yeah.
The staff
knows because they're cop plants.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone knows. Apart from Kathy.
They were real quick to pick up the bodies because it was like, this is the same day.
Yeah. Yeah,
two coffins ready. He's like, cops are showing
up. If you're an elite, you're used to pick up bodies underwater.
But the second panel of the last page there, we see like the old world superimposed on the new world, which is right. a new boat. I mean, yeah. it's not an old gondola.
Right. The gondolier is very much from another era.
Yeah. yeah.
And then the
and last panel is really the only, and it's going forward, right? It's,
towards the city.
Yeah. yeah so it, they really brought us into.
Do
that
you think
old world.
That gothic romance, like a gothic romance setup like this, would work as well if it all took place in the new world? Because at the start we were going. That's really cool that it's like a contemporary
right.
take on it. It's taking place today, or today mm-hmm. being 1972, but today. And then she goes to what is essentially the past. And right. at the end, we're seeing her coming out of the past. So where the gothic has to happen is in a past setting, even though it's today.
Well,
it's like in a time warp.
I understand what you're saying.
One thing you should realize is most gothic stories were written in the modern era when it was written. So it's not strange that this one's written in its own
era. It was the modern era for them. But yeah. now, today, we look at Gothic literature, and it almost has to take place in the 1900s. This story doesn't take place in the 1900s, but then it does.
Right.
By 1900s, I mean 1800s.
Right. 19th century.
Oh, 1900s fit, too.
Yeah, right? Edwardian. Yeah.
That brings us back to 50
Grays of Shades.
Yes. We're going back, not necessarily to a locale that is old world that has all this, but it's more of these older values of the controlling, the women do not have power. We're kind of going back to these weird older values that a lot of people have kind of transitioned out of.
Kinky sex?
Up to chapter 7.
Where I think you mean where the king, like, women as property.
Yes, women as property, where I have not read the books. I have a lot of friends who have, and the main concern that comes out of it is not necessarily kink shaming, which whatever you need to do to get freaky, that's fine. It's more of an acceptance in these books where a woman giving away her power, her own, like, personal power in this situation, is fine if he's handsome, rich, and, you know, can provide. It's kind of touchy on those subjects. So, yeah, it's that kind of would be gothic romance in that sense, because we're going to these values.
Can we create the kind of surreal or supernatural if we never went to an old castle, if there was never anything old?
50 Shades of Grey was Twilight fan fiction, and then they had to stop.
I don't think gothic romance is just too stemmed in the old world dying and those metaphors to have anything to do with...
It would be very hard.
Anything to do with 50 Shades of Grey or any type...
I think 50 Shades is missing anyways that... The nightmarish quality. I mean, it's nightmarish for a reason,
right.
for one reason, but it's not the it's that called, nightmarish surreal.
It's very singular.
Because there's no surreal.
No, there's no super. Nothing that's supernatural.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So can it?
If anything, Twilight fits better.
But
vampires.
There's still time travel there. There's still we're still going back to an older.
Could we
do a story, a gothic story about baby boomers versus Generation Y, you know, where the old values are baby boomers? And could that happen? Because that's how they did it back then,
that's
right?
My gothic SUV.
Yeah.
It's just covered in skulls. Late 1800s
were such a different turning point, I think, compared to any...
We
haven't had a tectonic cultural shift like that in a worldly sense, because America has been, you know, the world power for, like, let's say in 100 years, all of a sudden everyone's socialist and communist, and I think we'll have lots of gothic stories about capitalism
the Hunger Games. It is about younger kids trying to rebel against the old ways which are currently in power.
But it's still missing the other elements, I think.
Yeah.
It still doesn't have...
It's like everything we find today kind of gets close, but doesn't manage to cross that finish line.
Well, also, I think the huge cultural and social shift is where the gothic take their essence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I think the gothic romance... I don't want to call it dead, but it's done.
You saw this coming from a mile.
Yeah. Like Del Toro made a movie, a gothic romance. That's great. It was fun. It's very entertaining. But at the same time, did he add anything new to the genre? Probably not. So you're stuck with a weird genre where it's done. We can have romance again. That's fine. But gothic romance, I think, means...
It's definitely an older form.
It means a certain canon.
Yeah.
Gothic romance is a certain canon.
And that's fine.
You can do a new one if you want.
And I think we can have gothic heroines in a modern setting.
Yeah.
If you just take that trope where the lovers are tormented for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something hidden. Yeah. She loves the bad boy, and the bad boy has a secret, and everybody has secrets.
Yeah. Everybody's broken.
You can kind of do that kind of setup and make it feel like we could say it's a cousin to gothic romance. Have we had gothic romances, boys?
Oh, that's
what I have dated witches, but...
I did have...
Wiccans, or...
Probably Wiccans. Okay. It wasn't all bad.
There's a difference between a witch and a Wiccan.
It didn't end up that nicely, but you know what?
Were they actual Wiccans?
No. Witchy.
Witchy.
I did have a pen pal from Italy once. She was a girl. I was in eighth grade.
Okay. Well, that's a connection to the story.
She was not to Venice. She was not
did
a contessa.
Yeah, I did.
She was not a contessa. She wasn't rich, but whatever.
I proofread.
Oh, yeah.
That's my connection to the story.
Marty looks really good in a red jumpsuit.
I've killed my first wife. I wasn't wearing a scarf, so when I pushed her over to the dock, it was fine.
This never happened.
I got lots of money out of it.
Well,
it was a great
time. I can personally say I have not killed my
Marty
first wife
is dirt
either.
Poor. So this never happened.
Yeah. This never happened.
Bass, have you
Please
killed your first
money.
Wife?
No.
I have not. Raise your hand if you've not killed your first wife.
I only kill for food. That's all I do.
You kill what you keep.
I kill what I eat. Like carrots and beets and chestnuts.
Pizza pockets.
Advertisement for another awesome comic book podcast.
Hi, I'm Gene Hendricks. You may remember me from such shows as The Hammer Podcasts and The Quantum Cast. I'd like to tell you about some special shows that I'm doing with some of your favorite podcasters. These shows are all about the live-action versions of comic book characters, and I'm calling them...
Legends of the Superheroes!
In each episode, we'll be looking at a different TV show or movie featuring characters like...
Wonder Woman!
Dr. David Banner.
And let's not forget about the non-superheroes, such as...
Swamp Thing!
Captain William Buck Rogers.
And many more. Look for the Legends of the Superheroes specials under the Hammer Podcasts at twotruefreaks.com.
Let's open the Lonely Hearts mailbag.
Woohoo!
Thank you, Fern.
It's a paper bag.
It's a paper bag. It's like a paper bag from the liquor store.
Hey.
We put your comments in the...
You know I like to party.
Send us letters.
And since you can send us comments on Twitter, Facebook, and the blog, so on Twitter... Very short letters on Twitter. On Twitter, Film and Water Podcast just sent us a little heart.
Oh,
heart.
So sweet.
Aww.
Start of a new romance.
Right. Mm-hmm. Count Druncula, Ryan Daly from Secret Origins Podcast, said, Everything I love about romance without any ladies ruining it. Wait a minute.
That's what he said.
We are very sensitive men, though.
Yeah. Diablo Frank from Roll Spine Podcast said, True romance, Patsy Walker... Full Frankgasm on this week's Lonely Hearts podcast. And that was, let's remember that episode 7 was...
Yes, it was our adventure.
Me and you, adventure in a comic book store.
Right here, the Holy Grail.
To find...
That's a beautiful piece, people.
Oh, Patsy.
It's like, I still don't know how to hold it. Because this is like 1950-something, Oh, thank you, Mike.
That's what you do with it. It's made for reading.
What angered the wizard?
$5. Patty is in the new Jessica Jones show. Check that out, people.
And it's also the one where our Romance Comics Theater was the story of two sisters.
Yes.
One was popular, one wasn't, and then the one that was going to get married doesn't and realizes she doesn't need to get married to the first guy.
Who cares?
That's right. Yeah. So those were the... That was
second guy is good enough, I guess.
Second guy.
You know what?
Good enough.
15
spoken
guys.
Like a second guy.
Oh,
details
ego.
Revealed.
Ouch.
What's left of it? It's dead.
Dr. G. Nerdologist said, hey, just wanted to let you know I used your Lonely Hearts promo on my recent Secret Sagas of the Multiverse episode.
Oh. So I'm a real doctor.
You can consider that an ad for his podcast. Love the show, he says. And from the Supergirl blog, hopes we will do a Supergirl episode. Ooh. And then we went back and forth on what we should do. And he recommended Adventure Comics number 388, which reprints a lot of Supergirl romances, including ones with Comet the Super Horse. So,
woo-hoo. You know what? I think we're going to do that.
Yeah, we're going to do that.
Superman fan, I want to.
She romances a horse?
Oh, yeah.
There's a super horse?
There's a super horse, super girl, super cat, super Irvine. There's a thing with horses.
I'm not familiar with the whole extended super dog.
We have
cat
a
family.
Super menagerie, my friend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and the horse has romances with both Supergirl and Lois Lane. So,
that's a spoiler. It's a sexy horse.
It's very Olympus type stuff.
Yeah. How do they disguise a horse and put like glasses on it?
Well, if it works for Clark.
Just take off the...
Does the horse work at Daily Planet?
No.
It's in the mailroom.
Oh, it has a blog.
No. And he's not Kryptonian.
He has a blog?
He's not Kryptonian. He's magical.
Oh, that's better. So Superman can't ride him because he hurts.
Well, he can, but it...
So the horse could beat Superman.
Yeah, the horse has beat him. I don't know.
We don't think
it. Who would win, Muhammad Ali or a horse?
Magic Muhammad Ali or Magic Horse?
No, the Magic Horse versus Muhammad Ali.
Is it the Muhammad Ali who fights Superman in that special?
Sure.
Then Muhammad Ali.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Actually, Muhammad Ali all the way.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Then Comics Reflection said, has Lonely Hearts pod faded? Mm-hmm. I really dig the show, but we just took a break during the holidays.
It was Christmas. Chill. I had video games to play.
That's right. We did not pod fade.
No.
We played Fallout 4.
Yeah, we're human. Yes, I did.
All three of you are human. I am a
robot.
A blogging robot.
Like, I personally, if I could become a robot, done. Just put my brain in a jar, plug me into a PC. There you go.
Well, monkey versus robot, I'm monkey.
And I'm robot. There you go.
I'm the versus.
Okay. Passes the period.
On Facebook. Mike Arsenault, who's a friend of yours, said, finally got a chance to listen to this one, which somehow managed to slip under my radar until Fern mentioned it to me today.
Yes.
Angrily?
Good marketing, Fern.
Yeah.
I like the idea of, one at a time. Just pick at it one at a time. I like the idea of live casting adventures. I think we shall appropriate this into our show.
Yes.
Thanks for the shout out. And later he asked a question, so I'll put it to the group. Have any of you read Strangers in Paradise? And if so, is it something you consider a romance comic? Well, to hear your thoughts, so we can take it as a suggestion of something we could do later.
Yeah, we could read it.
As anyone does.
What is that?
Stranger Paradise?
Stranger Paradise?
I have not read it.
I have, like, the first 2 years of it, probably.
I don't know what it is.
I don't know if I'd call it a romance, but it is a soap opera. Mm. It's really about two girls, I think Francine and Cachou, I think that's it. I haven't read it in super long.
It's
a bromance for girls.
Okay, well, that's cool.
It's really a bromance between those two girls who are a little bit sexually fluid. I think it fits. It's not necessarily a romance.
When you say fluid, like
yes,
T-1000 fluid.
Yes, exactly. T-1000s.
Oh man,
walk through bars and have kinky sex between those bars.
And then he realized that he called us the Broken Hearts.
Aww.
Team instead of Lonely Hearts.
No, our hearts are not broken. They're mushed up.
Well, speak for yourself.
And maybe kicked around, but they're not broken.
Mine's fine.
Huh? So I said, actually,
Marty's the only one who's fine. The rest of us, we're getting by.
Your lark is like the main battery for all of ours.
We're the rings, and you're the battery.
So what? If we're like Wizard of Oz characters, I'm the
we're all Tin Men.
We're all Tin Men.
I think Fern is kind of like
I'm Dorothy.
Half Tin Man, half
Scarecrow.
Yeah, half Scarecrow. A little bit.
Anyway, he says, I suck at being a super fan. And then a friend of his, Robert Dean, said, don't sell yourself short. You suck at many things.
Robert Dean is the other half of their
podcast. Right. On the blog, Sally P. from Green Lantern Butts Forever.
It's a great name.
You've seen that blog, yeah.
I'm writing that down. Green Lantern Butts Forever.
Yep. It's a great portion of it is about Hal Jordan's or Guy Gardner's butts.
Mm-hmm. They have nice butts. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Yep. If you got it, flaunt it.
They're big, dumb butts. They've all got brain damage. They're always hitting their heads, but awesome butts.
Yeah.
That's the thrust of the blog. So Sally says...
Please don't thrust towards a butt blog.
I think she's commenting on the theater.
Okay.
By saying, so many tears. Because it was a very cryy kind of... I think the girls did a good job at, you know, producing tears you could hear on tape.
Yeah.
Anik and Joelle.
Yes.
Council of Geeks, that's Nathaniel Wayne. This was interesting to hear, since I found myself wondering how you guys were even finding these comics. A little peek behind the scenes was appreciated and fun to hear. And what an epic romance theater this month. And like I told him right then and there, we found that one in a comic book store, but a lot of these stories are from trades or reprints, which are much easier to find today. Rob from the Aquaman Shrine and Film and Water, and he's part of our Fire and Water podcast network, says, fun episode as always, gents. And then he says, thinking about Marvel's long history with romance comics, I wonder if they would ever branch out into the romantic comedy genre via Marvel or Netflix. Probably too much of a change to the brand, but the appearance of various Walker girls throughout Marvel's history makes me wonder what that might look like.
Well, Jessica Jones!
Haven't they, no, was it DC?
DC announced like a sitcom type thing. It's like The Office, but in the DC universe.
Yeah, it's not a powerless. I haven't read it, or I don't know much about it, but it's... It's basically that.
They're planning something.
Yeah. But I heard something about the maybe the Marvel universe.
Yeah, Marvel, they're going to be doing something with like the B characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something. Yeah. I haven't checked up on it, but it's going
to
be...
But they've been talking for a long time. They've been talking about doing Damage Control. It's a comedy series Agents about the people who repair all the crap that gets broken in those fights.
Yeah. I think that could be interesting.
That was a fun bunch of miniseries in the comics.
That would be nice. That was fun.
But they've been talking about that like since... Before Wave 1.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think right now they're just trying to establish their whole characters because we still have Iron Fist coming and...
I'm not sure that romance comics-based TV series would feel like a comic book series at all. I mean...
Probably not. Not unless they have
powers. There were some very good elements in Jessica Jones.
That was an awesome series.
Yes,
I haven't seen it yet.
I mean,
the Marvel universe. Everyone's this quirk master with quippy lines. It's the quip universe where everyone can quip. So it's already like super kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like even when it's Jessica Jones super serious, but they always have one liner or quip.
Yeah.
Age of Ultron again, it's kind of serious, but still had time to joke around.
Well, they always have time to joke around.
They've got properties, unlike a lot of comic, romance comics, which are just one-offs, little short stories.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel does have some name characters that they could actually use. Nurse, Patsy Walker, Millie the Model, all had fairly long careers or still exist in the Marvel Universe today. So you could possibly do something where it's Hellcat, but it's Patsy Walker, basically. Right.
They've introduced those characters in Jessica Jones, Nurse, and Patsy.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, and Agent Carter's about to start their second season. That kind of felt like it was still, you know, Agent Carter, spy stuff, 50s. But there was kind of romance elements, too. It was a bit cheeky.
There's always going to be romance, you know, that's what gets everybody.
Yeah, you got more people watching. Yeah. You've got all the elements. Ryan Daly, again, from Secret Origins, says, really enjoyed the clip from True Romance, which started the show.
Yeah.
Also, Fern gave me a great idea. You don't hear that those words often.
No, we never hear that.
Also, Fern gave me a great idea. The next time I go comics shopping, I'm going to say it's for science.
Yes.
Science is great.
We're looking for romance comics. Then there's Martin Gray from Scotland, who... That wasn't an attempt at a Scottish accent. I don't know what I was doing. I think it was from Scotland. Martin Gray is the one who proposed we do a gothic romance episode.
Well, thank you. That was fun.
I hope that suited your needs. He said, for another nifty piece of podcasting. I love the romance theater. I never knew Bernard Sachs wrote and penciled as well as inked. I love the super clean work here, and what a wise tale. And then we had Diablo Frank from Rolled Spine, who I know well as a consummate commenter.
Mm. Okay.
He leaves extremely long, involved comments.
Okay.
So he has a lot of words.
Follow him on Twitter.
On Twitter, he has to keep it short. But on our various podcasts...
Doesn't he have his own podcast?
He has his own podcast, or the Rolled Spine family of podcasts. He leaves a lot of comments. So sort of pick and choose here, but let's read some of it.
You won't see the worst, folks.
some of it may seem, you know, out of context at this point. It's been too long, so I'll keep it relatively short. Because he started with episode 7 in his commenting. He's listened to them all, but never commented.
Right, I remember we had a discussion where he was just going backwards.
Right. He says, long-time listener, first-time commentator. Since I finally caught up with the show, again, I think you guys kept making more and leaving me behind. I'm too tired tonight to do anything of true value. I'll review the shows backwards until I get sleepier and lose interest or can't remember what was said in that episode or get drawn into a YouTube video in another tab. So he got through 4 episodes.
Well, this is pretty good.
Not too bad.
It's 4 hours?
It's 4 hours of comments. Stand by. And he usually bullet points this stuff. And here, the bullets are little broken hearts.
Aww. Yeah.
Oh, this is all him?
Yeah, that's all him. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We should change our... Huh? Titled Broken Hearts, because that's what people remember us.
Yeah. On episode 7, which is the same episode we've been discussing, Mac and I, Mac being Illegal Machine, another member of the World Spine guys, says Mac and I are both big Tarantino fans, and I gave him a True Romance DVD as a present, though I've only seen it once or twice decades ago and didn't like it overly much. I wonder if I'd like it better with the passage of time, a la Jackie Brown, or less Reservoir Dogs, though it's still pretty good. Well, I recommend True Romance just because it's... just a Christopher Walken bit alone.
Oh, yeah. True Romance is good, too.
It's good.
It's Tarantino's early work. We like that.
It's Tony Scott is directing.
Yeah.
So you don't have necessarily the same quirks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the sweetest script Tarantino's written.
Yeah, especially not the last one that came out. Ew.
Didn't he write Four Rooms also?
One of the Four Rooms.
Okay. Yeah. Bathroom.
That was the whole point.
Okay.
He wrote a line in Crimson Dawn, or what is it called? The submarine movie?
Crimson Tide.
Crimson Tide. He wrote, like, a conversation. When you hit the conversation about the Silver Surfer, Tarantino wrote that. Okay. And then he marketed the fuck out of that.
Well, you know what? He's great. I love him.
That's so weird.
Yeah, I know. The period when he wasn't really wanting to do movies.
Yeah.
Just like
open
miking and different other movies.
But now I released The Hateful BB-8.
And then he says, the accents of the ladies in Romance Comics Theater were super cute.
Aww.
One of the better stories so far, too. And you haven't seen the girls.
I know. Huh? He's in for a surprise if you ever see them.
They are super cute.
They are.
Yeah. Then he says, I've got a stack of low-grade Patsy Walkers and Patsy and Hetties I pulled together through a few eBay lots for an average of about $2 or $3 an issue. Though that approach also left me with a bunch of duplicates and focuses mostly on the 60s stuff. The Patsy line didn't switch from teen humor to romance until 1964, so our 1958 is maybe not quite romance yet for him. Well, they won't resemble the show's usual fare anyways, he says. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy the comedy material, and getting the Roll Spine boys to read those isn't like pulling teeth. So he's really talking about where Patsy was in between humor and romance. Neither fish nor fowl, nor weird nor funny, but it's no wonder the new direction killed both books after a year and change. Billy the Model made the same mistake, but absorbed the problematic elements better through a more flexible format and by going back to humor instead of getting canceled outright. But we've covered Archie, so we're not against the more...
Yeah, we're fine with that.
Comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
On episode 6, which was the slap happy spanking episode.
Classic. American classic.
Yeah. Everybody spanks.
He says, as best as I can tell from reading his comic, Joe Gill was a right-wing tool of the patriarchy, but sufficiently arch and arbitrary and quirky to be thoroughly enjoyable as camp. On the various theories offered, I most agree with this being written as a man's power fantasy. It's about a guy who never stops being a guy, but he goes along with a charade to score until his female adversary finally gets her comeuppance and confesses she always secretly wanted his macho dominion. Viewed from that perspective, it's actually something of a horror story of emasculation with an EC-style twist in the end. That said, behind the scenes, he must have been throwing bone like a caveman to work out his frustration. Even the art heavily sexualizes the gal, while the gent is your basic model male.
This was a very long con for this guy.
You always see that, because every time feminism becomes like in the 70s, there was a feminism boom.
First wave.
Of course, there was
the suffragette wave.
Yeah.
True.
There's always like a weird backlash, even not right now, today.
Yeah.
feminism's like really gaining steam right now again, and course you see lots of backlash. Like, that's not true, feminism. Like,
yeah, it's disgusting.
Like, I'm expecting some Facebook post of a guy slapping his girlfriend.
Well, you
like,
see, I mean, you try to.
She likes it. See,
yeah,
she's okay with this.
Yeah, she. I'm treating her like a person. Yeah, of course you are, you dumbass.
So he also talks about Vince Scaletta, who was the artist on it. Mm-hmm. He says he was. He says Vince Scaletta was what I call an assimilator, an inker with such a heavy hand he overwhelms the pencil with his style. I liked him over Kirby because you can only tame his brutishness so much, and the king could use some softening more often than not. Also, Scaletta was specifically Kirby's Thor inker, giving that book a distinctly different look from Joe Sinnott's Fantastic Four. See, Frank's like really an expert in comic book stuff. His head is full.
I'm still saying, like, in Chasing Amy, he's a tracer.
He's a tracer.
You're an anchor tracer.
And of Denise Oliver, who played the role of the woman in that.
Yes, yes, yes.
He says she was a gem. I figured she was at least a frustrated actress at first blush, but was unsurprised to learn she's a working professional just slumming it in podcasting. There's a richness of character in her speech that's a cut above, but no offense to regular folks' efforts. Obviously.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're doing voices.
Yeah.
But then Bess is a professional actor.
Yes, yeah. And I do voice work.
You do voice work.
But in French, so that's
That's it. She didn't have the language barrier that some of us have. So
going back, silly
let's continue to go back in time. Episode 5, which was the Secret Wars episode.
Oh yes. Yeah. Okay.
Frank didn't care for that one much. He has to confess that he was incapable of paying attention to the episode, drifting off, dropping, picking up again at least a half dozen times. He blames the Secret Wars event itself, which doesn't interest him. His brain perceives it in a line-wide countdown arena kind of idea. So,
but I think that episode was it's a Secret War thing, and when we say Secret War, a lot of people go ugh.
Yeah.
But it was we all thought that it was a refreshing type of thing during
that issue that we covered. That, but a lot of people dropped out just of the event entirely, and
we do understand,
which is done now. So, go watch it.
Right.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about crossover events. There was a back and forth here that I'm not going to repeat. Although I do like his line about both companies, Marvel and DC, both companies have been locked in a codependent incestual dance of industry death for so long that they're hard to tell apart most days.
Yeah. Recently, like last week, I read an article where the numbers came out for comics and they're doing terrible right now. Like, there's a comic boom for movies and TV, but the comics themselves, oof.
And in episode 4, which was the Archie episode.
Ooh, okay. Yes. I love that one.
He says, I remember Archie's as the things you read when you'd read everything else and were probably hanging out at a girl's house. One Christmas, my stepsister gave me one or two Archie adventure series titles, a random issue of the Wagner Demon miniseries, and an Archie she'd obviously bought for herself but threw in after reading, which was still way better gift than I deserved and probably more than I ever gave her in return. I've tried to read them as an adult, including buying the first 1,000-page cheap digest they put out, and still think they're garbage. The only thing I dig about them are the DiCarlo model hotties, and I frankly worked out any frustration they inspired through clandestinely acquired cherry Pop-Tarts in my teens.
This is the hottest of takes on Archie I have ever seen.
Patsy Walker comics are way better than Archie's, even without the mind-bending ties to mainstream Marvel continuity in a variety of genres, which she did way back before Archie even considered such a move. And then he says, if I were lucky, I'd end up with Betty, find her terribly boring, and shag Veronica on the side.
So you'd be great for
He said, if it went the other way, I'd probably hate my overly dramatic life with Veronica, who I could never get away with catting around on. Not that goody-goody little Betty would be the DTF anyway. Cheryl Blossom is too much woman for my sorry ass. He prefaced it with, if I were lucky, because clearly, like, if it were me going to Riverdale High, I wouldn't be getting with any of them.
No.
Not even Ethel.
I'd be lucky to have a date with Ethel.
Yeah, if we're being realistic.
Yeah.
And then he agreed.
Out of our group, you'd be Moose.
I am.
You would have the best chance.
I have darker hair, but, you know, everything else is Moosey.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he agreed that, really, he was a clueless loser, mopey, pseudo-rebel drifter in thrift store clothes who couldn't tell which girls liked him more.
Of course you are. You read comic books. That's what we all are. Preaching to the choir here, boy.
That's it. So Frank is one of us.
One of us.
One of us.
One of us.
Right.
And he also said that Mrs. Sam Brennan in the... this was the theater was the one about You Also Snore, Darling?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So he says of that the Mrs. Sam Brennan in that was disturbingly neurotic. His sympathies to the Romance Comics Theater players who had to give that voice. Oh. And then we have the privately, some people, communicated with me during the holidays to make sure we were still on, that we were still going to do shows.
Are you guys still alive?
Yeah.
We enjoyed
kind of bored right now. You have an episode up?
Yeah, that's it.
That's true. I've gotten messages like that.
Yeah.
Like,
and I mean, for me, it was, I mean, we could have gotten together and we were all in town. But to me, it's like, I don't want to produce content for the holidays. Everybody's busy doing something else. Well, I guess we were wrong.
Yeah, no. go sing, drink some eggnog, sing a carol, enjoy Christmas time. That's what people do, even if you don't like Christmas. Yeah.
Listen to episode 6 again.
Yeah. Exactly. If you guys are missing our podcast, do it like I did. Get some eggnog, get some whiskey, watch Die Hard like 5 times in a row, go to bed, and repeat the next day until the next episode comes out.
Yeah, but we do enjoy doing this and much more. So.
And so, and a lot of people in the, now that we've joined the Fire and Water Podcast Network, other networkers have been telling me that they started listening to it. Those were our comments, and then I'll just read a litany. I'll put music under this to make it bubbly and bouncy, but here's a list of Facebook likes and shares. Clinton Robinson, Film and Water Podcast, Annie Clandry, Joël Martin, Dave Mag, Snell, Max Romero, Nicholas Fromm, The Comic Hunter, Moncton, it's our store, Comics Reflections, Askel McNacty, Robert Ward, The Pulp 2 Pixels Podcast, Mike Gillis, David Fiore, Ryan Daly, Isabel Godet, Michael Wagner, Gautam Sharon, Dean Ramos, Mike Peacock, and on Google, we got likes and shares from Gene Hendricks, on Twitter, retweets and favorites from Ange, Coffee and Comics, Shotgun, Illegal Machine, Sam Loeb, Remy from Comic Hunter, again, that's our store, Greg A., The Hammer Strikes, Comic Reflections, and Nathaniel Wayne.
Woo! Thank you, guys. Thanks, very nice.
Now that we're with Fire and Water, expect us to see us at MAGFest. No.
It's not true. Are you water or are you fire?
Well,
are
you fire or water? I've been drinking water the whole podcast. Fern has been drinking fire. So
to be fair, I do like it spicy. If
are you fire?
I'd probably be fire.
Bass?
I'm not sure.
I'm water.
Yeah, I'm 100% water.
I'm water sign.
You know, I think I'm fire.
Like,
all right.
If we were in Avatar, I want to be a water bed.
No, you know? I'm too passionate to be water.
Yeah. I like to flow, Bruce Lee. I'll be like water.
Yeah.
I think I'm hot water. I'm freaking boiling water.
You're hot water. I could be ice. I'm cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I'd be ice.
That's true. You're a flowing stream of tranquility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm
you're
very
a meditation cassette.
I'm fire. Yeah. I'm fire from a damp piece of wood. So it's smoky.
You smell.
Yeah.
Oh man.
All right.
I'm great with barbecue.
Say goodbye, guys.
Great barbecue.
Say your
goodbyes. Bye. See you next week.
Love you.
Mwah. Leave a comment on the blog at lonelyheartspodcast.wordpress.com or on iTunes or on Facebook. The page is Lonely Hearts Romance Comics Podcast. The views expressed on this podcast belong solely to the speaker. All music, audio clips, and images are used for entertainment purposes only and are believed covered under fair use. We don't make any money off this program, so no copyright infringement is intended. Thanks for listening.
Here's to the losers. Here's to the losers. Bless them all.
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. Put it into a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now water can flow or creep or drip or crash. Be water, my friend.